What's up, everyone? This is Logan with CigarFederation.com. Broadcast, actually right here. I don't know if we're actually going to be on AFRN, so I don't really know what to say. So we're here. We're live. Got two of my favorite people, and the third person hasn't joined yet because he's just a big bowl of dummy, and he'll come later. But we've got tonight something a little bit different. We don't have Cigar Chat. We have a very special recap show because recently there was a media trip that out to, of all places, Belgium and the Netherlands to visit Royal Agio Cigars. And then a follow-on was going to Intertobac, which is more or less the world's IPCPR. So we've got a couple people we're going to just kind of talk about what happened at the show, kind of give our experiences, et cetera, et cetera. Probably talk a lot of nonsense. And with me tonight, I've got two codenamed people. Big Tuna, what's happening?
What's going on there, brother?
Nothing, Tuna. How are things? How was Ella's birthday party?
That was a blast. Really good time. Very good time.
Did she do the whole smash cake thing? Or is that just one, when they're 1 year old?
They just kind of did when she was one. She did like her own private birthday party, but now I just kind of got drunk on beer.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, that's what tunas do. Yeah. And we've got a brand new face, and soon to be on Cigar Federation a lot more, due to him going to be co-hosting Pipe Dummies with me. I want to introduce everyone to Ben Bull Shark Lee. How's everybody doing from Stogie Review? What's happening?
Doing awesome. Glad to be on here.
I know. It's about time, man. It's about time to have you on here. But, dude, the pipe stuff is going to be next level-ish. It's going to be awesome.
Next level-ish.
Dude, it's going to be real for real. Dude, Ben, we haven't had but like one or two guests, and that's because Rob was too lazy to do anything. So I got a few guests, like Laudacy, I got Savinelli, and then Grattan Babson, and then we had D.E. Ben, in his first show ever, might have just locked down Dunhill.
Yeah,
I mean, that's we're what hoping. The bull, huh? We're hoping. Well, that's true. Yeah. That's what the bull shark
it's
does.
90% confirmed right now.
90%, okay. I'll take it. 90%, I will take it. So we have another guy joining us, Brian Hugh from Story Review, but he's taking forever. He's late, so we're just going to kind of march on without him. So, you know, kind of talk about our trip. So we had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago to, you know, spend time with Royal Agio. And it was very kind of interesting because we've been, you know, Seth and I have been on, you know, a lot of different trips, you know, different cigar manufacturers, with all of them being in kind of north, you know, in Central America, right? Whether it be Nicaragua or Honduras or the Dominican, but never anything in Europe. So it was kind of an interesting trip. And kind of the reason for the invite was Royal Agio, as you guys probably don't know, I think it was not this year, but last year, entered into a distribution agreement with Drew Estate. So Drew Estate is their kind of U.S. distributor. So it was kind of to go over there and see their operations. So before I kind of blow the whole trip, Seth, what did you think going into the trip?
You know, you're talking about a completely different experience. It's funny because when you go down, you know, you go to a factory in Nicaragua or anything, Honduras, you know, you're greeted by people either wearing like Guayberas or T-shirts, the company T-shirts. Going to Belgium, dude, it's suits and men in Windsor knots.
This is true.
That's what
everyone's like Euro trendy too.
Oh, it was like they had the pointy shoes, the Windsor knots, the suits. I was like totally different ball game. But I was impressed in awe by the factory.
Show's over. Tuna spoke his mind. Show's over. So, you know, when I was kind of going into it, I wouldn't say apprehensive is not the right word, but, you know, just to set the context, I mean, Royal Agio, and we'll get into more kind of the history and stuff, but, you know, Royal Agio has been around for a long time. And
1904.
Thank you, fact-finding Seth. But it's been around for quite a while, and, you know, most of you probably haven't heard of them except for potentially the Balmoral, the Long Throw. They actually do have a factory in the Dominican. But a majority of what they produce are the Panther. I don't even say I'm saying this right, but Panthers, yeah, Maharis, and other kind of flavored slash, you know, short filler kind of cigars, cigarillo kind of things. So going over there, I was a little kind of apprehensive. I'm like, well, you know, I love traveling. I love going to Europe, but I'm like, what are we doing? You know, why are we? What's the point? Like, you know, I don't necessarily smoke these cigars. Like, I don't really understand it. So going into it, I was a little bit kind of like, okay, so what are we doing? So, you know, and kind of when we landed, Bull Shark, tell us about the flight. It was horrible.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Well, it's the longest flight I'd ever been on.
Seriously?
Because the longest I'd ever been on would be when we go down to Nicaragua, which is about 3.5 hours. That's probably the longest I've ever been on. So going over there, it was 8-hour flight. That was excruciating because I'm not the smallest cat in the room for sure. And the seats are little bitty narrow seats for little European people.
And European people.
It was something else for 8 hours. I tried to sleep the whole way. Everybody said, oh, just sleep, whatever. I could not get comfortable enough to sleep on that airplane. You know?
This is true.
The flight back was a lot better for me, though.
Oh, really?
Because I got to catch up on my Downton Abbey all the way back.
Dude, have you ever actually watched that show? Do you actually watch that show?
Downton Abbey? Oh, yeah, dude. I'm so addicted to Downton Abbey. It's unbelievable.
Are you also addicted to watching, like, gay porn?
Not that I'm
dude,
aware
what's wrong
of.
With Downton Abbey? What's wrong with Downton Abbey?
Dude, Downton I tried to watch it. I literally fell asleep watching it.
Well, that's you, Logan. I mean,
it's like, hello, sir. Hello, Governor. It's like,
well, it's not Rambo. Jesus.
Hey, well, I know that, but dude, there's
the
also
movie,
good.
The movie selection by Delta was really good, I thought.
Oh, they had the new Mad Max Fury Road, I thought, which is an awesome movie.
It's an incredible movie. It was an incredibly well done movie. They had the new, I wanted to see the Beach Boys Love and Mercy. They had that movie. They had a bunch of good stuff.
They had HBO on there too, so I just saw the first episode of the new True Detectives.
I did too. And I watched half of season 3 of House of Cards, which was nice.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Very nice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an 8-hour flight, so it sucks. But it's uncomfortable.
But I fly all the time.
Yeah, I upgraded to the Delta Comfort
both ways. I knew what we were getting ourselves into.
And it was a hell of a lot more comfortable.
So basically, moral of the story is the flight sucked. We landed and we're all tired as shit. So
you're dead, man. You're dead.
We were dead. But we pretty much hit the ground running. So, you know, we hit the ground running. We got the bus. Kind of took a leisurely drive through the Belgium countryside to get to where did we stay? It was Antwerp, correct?
Well, yeah. we went to Koenigshaven in the Netherlands.
Oh, that's right. No crap. I totally forgot about that.
How the hell you remember the name of that place is amazing.
What was the name of it?
Koenigshaven.
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 All right, whatever.
The Abbey. Koenigshaven Abbey.
Downton Abbey. Okay, we went to the Downton Abbey.
The Downton Abbey. So, yeah, so we basically went to La Trappe. To the Trappist Abbey, which now they call the Trappe, but which was pretty cool. We saw that. Remember, we saw the barrel of the what was it? Some bourbon.
It was like yellow.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gosh, shit. What was it? Makers? Remember. No, not Makers.
Yeah, it wasn't Maker's Mark. It wasn't
Woodford Reserve.
Woodford, that's what it was. Yeah. Woodford Reserve. Yeah.
Official bourbon of Kentucky. They're aging their, but that was, you know, that was a good time.
So, I mean, I'm not a big beer drinker. What was the coolest thing about the beer factory tour for you guys?
Brian's here. Introduce Brian.
Hey, I'm here.
This is the guy who's always late, Brian Hewitt, from Stogie Review.
I should have put this in a calendar. I completely forgot about it, and I was thinking for some reason it was tomorrow. I saw your email. I'm like, oh, shit, that already happened.
You know what the effective range of excuses, Hewitt?
What's that?
0 meters. So shut up and let's go.
Yeah, all right.
You don't mention the bull shark. But perfect timing, Hewitt. So tell us, what was the coolest thing you saw about La Trappe?
I think it was cool to see their old all their old equipment. They kind of glossed over the new stuff, but the old copper kettles that they were using were pretty neat. I mean, the barrels. I mean, honestly, the barrels was the most exciting thing for me. And after trying the their barrel-aged quad, I'm excited. I hope it makes it over here. So those were the most exciting things.
Oh, that was that oak age when we tried last.
You can get them. You can get them.
You can get them over here. I've not seen them.
Yeah, I've got them before. You know, the thing is, they're not like a 750, but they're bigger than the regular ones. But it's like like $20. They're like $20 a bottle. And I've picked them up. Wow. I probably picked it up like 3 times, but I didn't notice until we were there that the last one I picked up, it was batch 14. So now I'm going to start trying to collect all the batches, which that's never going to happen.
I just want to drink all the batches. We had batch 20 there, and that was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was
wonderful. Yeah, I think that was the best beer from La Trappe that I had, was that oak age one. It was extremely, just a really good beer. And I'm not a beer guy either. Brian is definitely the beer guy in this crew for sure, and Seth is too. But I where I live at Mississippi, our laws have made it to where I can't get a lot of these beers. So while we're over there, I kind of relied on Hewitt. Yeah, I relied on Brian to tell me, oh, this is a good one, you know, try this one, and this is what you should get out of it. It was a really cool learning experience, because like a lot of those beers that we tried there, you know, I'm not a real big beer drinker, but I wanted to, like I told my wife, I said, I wanted to drink them just to say, hey, yeah, I've had that beer in Belgium.
You know? Yeah.
But it kind of expanded my knowledge, too, of a lot of that stuff, too. So that was really cool. But touring the brewery right off the plane was pretty cool, but it was hard because I was so tired.
Oh, yeah. No sleep going directly from the plane, basically up all night and touring a brewery. The thing that they should have done is gotten us beer immediately.
Yeah, they
we needed that liquid energy.
Yeah, they probably should have given us some beer and tobacco immediately. That's probably the first thing.
It was kind of weird not smoking on the bus, man.
Yes.
It was funny how we all expected that, too. As soon as we got on the bus, we're like, okay, where's the beer and the humidors with the cigar in it?
It was kind of strange.
Stefan was no Henry.
Well, because of all the smoking laws, we can't. Yeah. Places we went, we couldn't smoke at all.
Yeah.
Well, I know in the various Latin American countries we've been to, you can smoke anywhere if you have enough the local currency in your pocket, you know, to hand them. We've seen that happen where non-smoking vans suddenly become smoking vans. So it's a shame that they didn't do that. But you know what, Agio is kind of, you know, they're
classy people.
They're classy. They're not the kind of throw a few bucks at somebody and try to break the rules. They're going to follow the rules, so you can just tell. They're proper.
They're good people. So for the guy that doesn't drink beer, our tour guide was, needless to say, quite eccentric and was too much. And all I remember from that whole tour was double fermentation.
Yeah, you remember that, right?
I do remember it. That's like all I remember.
Fermentation in the bottle, yeah.
Tony was insane.
Yes. And you know, I find it interesting that can you guys still see me? I just see a Cigar Federation logo. Okay. So the interesting thing about that is, as a home brewer, the second fermentation usually isn't so much about gaining additional alcohol. It's just about the carbonation. So
right.
They're very excited about the carbonation, which, you know, bottle conditioning, which is what that's called, or second fermentation, is great in that the carbonation in the beer, it produces smaller CO2 bubbles, so they seem smoother and creamier, so you get a better mouthfeel, and it can result in a better flavor in a beer. I prefer it, but that's just uber beer nerd type of stuff there, because most people wouldn't be able to tell the difference, honestly. So, but I guess we're all kind of beer hipsters now, even if we don't want to be, so...
Yeah, a little bit. Which, like, there's Trappist beer, which is pretty much all that we drank while we were there. Now, Brian, those are all kind of a sweet beer, like they are.
Yes.
The same style, kind of banana, clove, sweet kind of thing.
Yeah, they vary a lot. The bananas are usually more prevalent in the triple, but we drank a ton of quads, which usually are more kind of plummy or pruny or something like
that.
They'll have the banana, but they'll have a lot of the sweet estuary flavors to it with the clove spiciness and whatnot in the background. It's great with
a cigar.
Yes, I like it. And it's not what a lot of people think about in terms of beer. They're used to thinking of something that's light and or hoppy and a little bitter, but this is just like a giant fruit bomb with spices. It's kind of like drinking a Thanksgiving dessert a little bit, these beers. So
going off that, what is everybody smoking tonight while we're talking? Just curious.
It is not an Agio product.
Well, I mean, mine isn't either. I don't have any either.
Yeah,
I smoked them all.
Yeah,
I got a UF13 from Drew Estate. Probably my favorite Drew Estate cigar ever.
I was going to cut out and light something up. I'm late, so I didn't even take the time to light anything up yet.
I got a Davidoff Nicaragua Bellicoso.
Oh,
fancy!
Fancy.
So we got off the bus. We went, drank some beer, and then we drove back into Antwerp, and we stayed at a very Euro-friendly hotel. And what I mean by this is that the stairwell was not made for American men. Like, I almost got stuck in the stairwell trying to walk up because it was so narrow. And then on the bathroom, like, there was so little space. But anyways, take out the hotel. We got to go out. It was really cool. Kind of the first night, you know, we got to go back. And do we have dinner the first night there? Is that the night we had the really long dinner?
No, yeah, that's the night really we went long. To that other hotel and ate.
That was...
No, we went to the hotel called Banks in Antwerp. Right. Yeah, and then we rode the bus. And then we did the tram, little tour, which, you know, first you're like, oh my God. Because there was like that
oh, dude, band. We had a marching band. It was awesome, though.
And at first I was like, oh gosh, like, please tell me these guys are not for us. And then I see him put on these like Agio sports jackets, and I was like, oh man, that's our band.
And the ironic thing was, it was a New Orleans jazz band.
Did you say ironic or erotic?
Ironic.
Oh, okay. I mean, whatever. Whatever your proclivities are, I'm fine with anything.
Singing in Dutch, nonetheless.
Yeah.
The entire way. But yeah, then we went to the five-course meal restaurant.
Yeah, that place was fantastic, and I do enjoy their use of a smoke in between meals, between courses. But I think if you're doing that, there should only be two courses, three tops.
This is true.
Yeah, we were there to like 12.
Yeah,
I smoked more cigars during dinner than I did all day, and that normally doesn't happen like that.
Yeah.
I think that dinner was 5 hours long, or so.
Yeah, we were there for a really long time. Well, I think you're right. I think it was like 5. I got there around like 7, and
yeah, we were there till almost midnight, or a little before midnight. Actually, after midnight.
Yeah, because I remember the PSV Man United Champions League match started after we got done with our appetizer, and it finished before we got to our main course. The whole match was over.
Seriously?
Yeah, because you had to hear Stefan talking about Eindhoven for the rest of the time.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't mind.
Dinner was good. It was actually probably the best meal we had.
Oh, that food was amazing. Yeah, definitely
fantastic.
Was amazing.
It was worth. It was too long, but I don't want to complain about it because that place was awesome. The food was great. I'm not going to say a bad thing about it.
See, I loved it. Even the length of it, I thought it was freaking awesome. Go eat, go take a cigar. Go back, eat, go back, get a cigar. And in between, drink some wine. Go back, have a cigar. Come back and eat, have some more wine, go have a cigar.
Then go to the bar.
Yeah, that was perfect.
We did start out at the bar downstairs. I forgot about that. There was a whole like appetizer thing downstairs.
Yeah, the little mussels.
Oh, that's right.
Little aperitif.
So we ate, and then this is the most embarrassing part of the story for myself, is that, you know, I went to bed, and I am not a nice man when I'm tired. And when I fall asleep,
you could stop with "I'm not a nice man."
No, it's true. I'm a complete jerk. Hewitt saw whenever, you know, kicking it, inner tobacco.
Dude's got issues.
Frenchies. Kicking Dude's Frenchies out of the way, man. It was bad news bears. But so basically I was talking to my – I was getting ready to talk to my wife. Forgot to set my alarm. And next thing I woke up to was – and it was Seth saying, "Hey, motherfucker, it's 9:15. We're supposed to be out the door at 9. You made us late." So I – made us late, and I apologize to everyone, including Royal Agio, the Winterman's family, and everyone. And let me just say, the amount of shit that I took from Charlie Minato the rest of the trip was just unbelievable for being late. But the part Seth doesn't know is that Charlie was late the day we went to Inner Tobac, and then I gave him a massive amount of shit, too, but that doesn't really matter. But Charlie can't take it either. He can't take it like try it like I can. But anyways, the next day after I got plenty of sleep and we were all drunk and had a long meal, I went to the Agio factory, which was the whole reason we were there. So, Seth, you know, what was kind of when we pulled up to the Agio factory, what were you expecting?
What was I expecting or what?
Yeah, was that? Yeah, just tell me your thoughts about the Agio factory.
I mean, you know, it's one of those things that I obviously did not expect it to be like Drew Estate or anything down in Nicaragua or Honduras and everything. So, but it's like, you know, I didn't expect. I mean, it's in an industrial park. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's this industrial park. Then you come to this modern building, which I was kind of like, okay, you know, I can see that. But I was not expecting it to be as eco-friendly as it was. I mean, the grounds were beautiful. The building was well kept. I mean, It is Belgium, Netherlands, right close to Germany, so I kind of expect this cleanliness and orderliness, which they had, but it was pretty impressive. It was clean.
They recycle all the rainwater.
Yeah.
That's all they said.
Stuff like that is how they retain or maintain their royal warranty. That's why they can be called Royal Agio, so doing things like that.
The predicate royalty, yeah.
And that's a crazy thing, and I'm going to let someone else explain it, but like, when I thought Royal Agio, I thought that was just, like, the title, right? But if you've heard, you know, there's Royal Dutch Shell, Royal Agio, there's actually significance to the royal name, which, in my humble opinion, if I was Agio, I would really tout the shit out of, because it's actually something really, really cool that here in the States, we're going to have no idea what it is. I mean, Hewitt, you want to break it down on what the royal certification or signification actually means?
Well, you know, I was putting together, and I just posted it, all the tour videos. So I got one long tour video, and I saw something in it. I had to watch every minute of it several times to get it right. But in there, one of the guys on the trip made a comment that it's effectively a corporate knighthood, and it has to do with if you're a responsible and upstanding in such and such amount of company that's been in existence for a certain amount of time.
100 years. Yeah, 100 years.
Yeah,
they said 100. I don't know if it's a full 100 or if it's shorter than that. You know, because aren't there some airlines and are they 100 years old? I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, like 100 years or something like that, and good, responsible, and contributing, and upstanding, and all that sort of thing, and that you apply for it, and if they decide that they like you, then they give it to you, and they got it before everybody took such a harsh turn towards tobacco, so they got kind of grandfathered in, I guess, at this point. But
yeah, I've actually been to
they had it the whole time.
I've actually been to the website. The Netherlands have an actual website dedicated to the predicate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they talk about. I mean, you basically have to submit all your financials. They're looking at everything, and then there's the other stuff involved in it as well. So it's just as Brian said. It's basically your. A damn good company. That's good for the country, too.
The royal family vouches for you is effectively what they're saying. And I presumably they can pull that back if you start misbehaving. So
these people got money, and they're Dutch, and they're good Dutch, so we're going to give them royalty.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And they changed their logo once they – I mean, apparently this is a big deal. So it went to they changed their logo. Their logo now has a crown on it to signify, you know – the royal. It's just very interesting. It's very, very interesting.
They take it very seriously, yeah. We don't have the whole royal family thing, so we don't really get or grasp most of that sort of thing. So
But yeah, I mean, what did they say? How many companies had had it, Seth? Like
150, I think. I think only 150.
That's freaking wicked. That's crazy. So, you know, I think the part for the factory tour that stood out the most for me, you know, going into it, you know, it kind of was the first kind of our kind of first stop, you know, was the, well, other than breakfast, because I hadn't had breakfast yet because I had overslept like a jerkwad. But other than that, I think the most interesting part for me that kind of took me back is that when you think, you know, machine-made cigars, you think short filler cigars, you know, I think a lot of people in the States have the idea that this is just like, you know, something I roll my pot up in, right? Like, I use a wrapper, I roll up a blunt. Like, this is like stuff off the floor. This is like trash. And when we walked in kind of the first station, I kind of realized pretty quickly that it's not. Because, I mean, and I know Brian's got a ton of videos, and I know I'm going to post a ton of videos here starting probably tomorrow. But when you look, I thought, oh, there's no way there's going to be any blending that goes into this. They're just going to throw tobacco in. But actually, believe it or not, it's like very scientific on how it works. So like when you're blending a cigar, like a handmade cigar, you're putting a leaf of this. The exact same thing is happening when you're making a machine-made cigar. The difference is instead of using a leaf here, half a leaf here, you're doing one bale, two bales of this, three bales of this. Yeah. So a lot of the blending still is happening. And the level of kind of, I wouldn't say quality control, but the level of scientific, like almost accuracy, right? I mean, with handmade cigars, I mean, you're going to get ones that are going to burn wonky. You're going to get ones that are underfilled. You're going to get ones that are all messed up. I mean, it doesn't really happen because it's all control. And that was the part that kind of like blew me away. It kind of turned my perception on kind of machine-made cigars that there's a lot that goes into it more than just picking up stuff off the floor and throwing it in a cigar.
Or maybe they just didn't show us that part of it.
They have that behind the big curtain. And the other thing that was crazy was the lack of people. You walk into, like, Drew Estate, and there's literally people for days. There's people having babies in the back corner to, like, start rolling cigars. It's crazy. There's so many people. Like, it's unbelievable. You can't even walk
people
down
the aisle.
People
making babies in the back
corner,
too.
No, seriously, they are. They are. Exactly. Like, they're everywhere. But in this fact, how many people did you see? Like, five?
That's what Kuba Kuba's throwing out, man. I think there's eight or nine that I saw all together.
Yeah, in the machine room, which they had this massive machine, which we had, like, Brian, so we got the video up on Stunger View now where we got the video of the whole machine. And it's one big, giant, continuous machine that does, you know, the blending, the grinding of the tobacco, and everything you could think of for the cigar. It does everything. And it's probably the size of, like, four Walmarts. I mean, it's a huge area. Huge. And I counted six people in that entire room.
Yeah.
They were just moving bales of tobacco because they had these big, large boxes that had the filler in it. And it was probably the size of, like an engine crate box. I mean, it was pretty big boxes, all plastic, and they just stacked them up along a wall probably seven or eight high, and it was just a whole wall of that. And that is basically that's what they were doing. One guy was loading them in the machine, and these guys were pulling them out of the machine. That was it. I mean, it was amazing. It's so efficient. It was crazy. Yeah. But they were ISO 9001 or 9003 certified. I can't remember which one it was. I know they were ISO 9000 certified, but I can't remember which one it was. But which, you know, in engineering, that's a huge deal.
That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, the room where they stored, like, the cologne, I mean, it was basically as big as DE2.
Yeah.
I mean, it was massive.
They didn't have as much. They probably didn't have as much. Well, maybe they did have as much tobacco. You just didn't see it as much. But they didn't have as huge a variety. But it was just they're pulling bales out. I mean, they're pulling out Matafina and Sumatra and
Cuban tobacco.
They have Cuban tobacco, which they put in their little their petite cigars, cigarillos.
They had Spanish tobacco too, which was unique. You don't see that much.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Spanish Havana or something. No, what was it?
Spanish Havana.
Was it Spanish Havana?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I mean, the little cigars, like you said, there was and over here in America, they considered trash cigar because the stuff you would go buy, you know, when you're too drunk at a gas station, you want to smoke something or you want to fill a full of marijuana. But like, you know, as Seth knows, it's like in Cuba, they have a lot of machine maids. Mm-hmm. And they're good quality. I mean, if you want a quick little smoke, they're great. They're fine. I mean, they're not the greatest thing in the world, but they're really good.
So yeah, what were those little Cohibas that we were burning that we picked up? Those were fantastic.
The Cohiba's got these little puritos, and so does Monte Cristo, which are fantastic. I mean, it's scrap Cohiba tobacco. It's got Monte Cristo tobacco.
But it's really good.
Yeah, exactly. I was kind of expecting when we went over there was that kind of quality of a cigar, you know. And most of what we smoke, matter of fact, I mean, when they put out a cigar for the smoke at the factory, because at the factory, after we did the tour, we had a pairing session with a bunch of different beers and, like, scotches, whiskeys, and a cognac or two was there. And we could pick anything we wanted from there. And, you know, the Balmoral cigar, the XO, the Añejo XO and all that, those are all, our premium cigars, how we turn premium cigars, you know, long filler, handmade, all that. And they're really good cigars. But I noticed a lot of us actually were grabbing those little short Balmorals. You know, I had two packs of those, actually.
Those are
They were really good.
Those are really good sticks.
And if you wanted to quit, like, 30-minute smoke, man, they were perfect.
Were we supposed to be pairing? Because I was just trying to drink all the Westy 12 I could get in my belly.
Just acting normal, basically.
You're just being your normal self.
Yeah.
I was with Ryan. It was like, let's just take advantage of the situation. But, you know, it was interesting.
Oh, my God, that spread of booze was fantastic.
We didn't
deserve it. It was too good for us.
It was interesting to smoke a lot of stuff, and it's just, you know, like even the De Hoof cart, which is it's not even available in the States. It's just kind of like a beer brand, which I think Brian, you smoked it too, which had like that really low priming Sumatra wrapper.
Which one was that?
De Hoof cart, the one with the wagon.
Yeah, that was the purple we smoked.
Yeah.
It was pretty decent. I mean, it was really, really, really mild. Might be the most mild thing I've ever smoked.
Yeah, it's very. It was interesting because, you know, I've kind of seen it. It's just there's a difference between what the rest of the world smokes and what America smokes, and what Europe classifies as like machine short filler is they classify it as a cigar. It's, you know, America's butchered it in the sense of, you know, you have all those and the flavored stuff, and I think, you know, part of that comes from the manufacturers and brand of these short filler cigars are crap.
Well, I can tell you that I've since tried a gas station cigar, a short filler, and it was awful. It was terrible.
I mean, there's definitely a difference between their machine made and, you know, what it
yes.
is.
I love those Panthers. I always have. I still do. I used to smoke the hell out of them, you know, many years ago when I was really into short cigars, and I love those.
I didn't even try them.
I love the smokes. Just fantastic.
Yeah, that was my one. I didn't get to try one of those while I was there.
I didn't really smoke any either.
Which one?
The Panther.
I think I did. I think. Is that the one that's, like, in the yellow box?
They have various colored tins. They got, like, red tin and a blue tin. They got mignon and regular, and they've got coffee versions of it. They've got, like, half a dozen different versions. They're readily available in the U.S. That's why I didn't smoke any. I'm like, I'm going to smoke stuff that it's harder for me to find in the U.S., so.
You know what I thought was really interesting? And I don't know this, I don't smoke a lot of Cubans, but you always hear a lot of people, and this is one rumor that got dispelled for me, is that, you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, I freeze my Cubans, I put them in the fridge overnight, blah, 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 blah. And when we walked in, first of all, I just want to tell everyone how much of a grizzly bear hard ass I am. I had shorts on, and I walked into this sub-20-degree freezer, and it felt like, you know, I was on a beach in Mexico. It felt wonderful, because Austin's so freaking hot. But, I mean, it literally moisture was coming out of the air. It was so fucking cold. But, anyways, so we asked Morris, we're like, man, it's freaking cold in here. Like, what's the deal? And he's like, yeah, we freeze everything, you know, just as a precaution. And we're like, well, why negative 20? He's like, well, that's the actual temperature you have to get to actually freeze beetles. And we're like, what?
To actually kill them.
Yeah. And so let me just say, for everyone that's putting their Cubans in their freezer overnight, like at maybe 25 degrees, no dice.
Yeah, please stop. It just hurts your cigar. Don't do it. Please, for the love of freaking God, stop doing that shit.
Just if you maintain,
it's not even just Cubans either. I mean, it's Nicaragua too. It's just, I mean, they're putting tobacco from everywhere in there. I mean,
that's true.
It's everywhere. But yeah, a lot of people do it with Cubans because they think Cuba's the one with the problem. But
just maintain the temperature. All you got to do is keep the temperature down. If you let it get 75 or above, they're going to start hatching and crawling around and chewing on stuff. If you don't, you're not going to have a problem. It's as simple as that. Just maintain your temperature. Don't freeze them. That's silly.
You know what's funny is that, not to get on a thing here, but you said 75. I mean, in my house, you know, during the summers, it'll run anywhere between, you know, I mean, depending on how cheap I'm wanting to be, 74 and, say, 77. Now, the AC is constantly running because it's in Texas and it's hot as shit here. But I've never had a problem, knock on wood, with anything, even that. My key is just the humidity. I just keep the humidity fairly low in my humidor. You know, most people keep it 70-ish. Mine runs more like 65.
Yeah, mine does too. But I live in a really humid area. So when I basically come to my man cave to smoke like I am now, the humidity is going to spike. So I know my cigar is going to absorb some percentage of humidity. So if I leave it low, like 65-64%, when I get outside, it'll be around 68-69, which is where I want it to be in the first place. So I try to keep it low myself.
I keep mine like everything around 65. And the funny thing is, like when I'll send it with like a Boveda pack, and people will be like, "Why do you keep the humidity so low?" I get people bitching at me for it, which is funny.
I prefer it that way, but I get tired of fighting with integrating stuff I buy in the stores around here that are always around 70 or 72. I just gave up on it, so I usually keep stuff around 70, but. Everything draws and smokes better around 68, in my experience, or even 65.
Yeah.
Lot fewer plug and draw problems. So, but you know, that's what's 70 is what's on the shelves out there. So I just, for the most part, I stick to about that.
So yeah, I'm.
No. Go ahead. Yeah,
but one more, just to get off of it, because I'm still thinking about it. Those short filler Balmorals, 3 years, Ben, you're absolutely correct. Those things were great. Both sizes.
Yeah. If they were available earlier, I would definitely buy them.
I smoked one earlier while I was editing the video I just posted. It was nice. It was enjoyable. If you smoke it, I found that I liked it more doing that because I was kind of leisurely smoking it than when I've kind of hammered through it when I'm in a hurry.
Yeah.
Which I think it's a mistake with those small things because they just get hot and they don't taste as good. It was pretty nice.
The only drawback is just the little bitty pieces of tobacco that get on your lip in your mouth. Which it's not bad. It's just a little bit, and it happens every now and then. But that's more prevalent in a short filter cigar, obviously. But it wasn't bad. But that was the only thing that was a little annoying about it. But
those are made in the DR, though, right?
No, those weren't. Those are made there.
They're made. The
binder. I mean, well, the filler and the binder are there. But I thought they then shipped them to actually have the wrapper put on.
I thought they put the wrapper on. I thought it was the other way around.
They shipped it. The wrapper came from Sri Lanka.
Right, on the bobbins
thing. And then they shipped that to the factory, and then they put it all together at the factory in Westerland.
Maybe they did that. We'll email Stefan or Marcel.
They have different procedures with different smokes, is what I've noticed, and I think there is one that they do something like that where goes the other direction or something like that, or the wrappers applied in Dominican, I think.
Well, the Balmorals are all made in, I don't know, but I don't think the short ones, are, the short filler are. They're made the in the Balmoral. The long filler are made in their factory in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, and they either stay in, because I asked, I said, because they said they ship everything. Everything goes, it doesn't go to Westerloo, it goes to their Eindhoven headquarters where they do all the packaging and so forth. Because everything goes there before it gets shipped. So I asked them, I said, do you ship it back to Eindhoven before shipping cigars to the States? They said, no, all United States allocation long fillers stay in the DR and they get distributed obviously with Drew State, they probably hook up with Drew
State. That's but I'm sure it's also
the Panthers and all that stuff.
Dude.
Oh, yeah, but the Panthers, all of them, go from Netherlands all the way probably to Miami.
That, right. Yeah. I mean, I think it was interesting actually getting to smoke. I mean, I definitely agree with Brian that, you know, if you smoke kind of a short filler cigar, you've really got to smoke it very, very slow because it'll get hot on you really quick. And it was just, you know, it was just impressive. And I think just the factory itself was very impressive, and being kind of a nerdy mind, seeing how they've done it, you know, and how mechanized it is and how automated. And dude, I'm telling you, when they watch these cigars, like actually put them on the machine, and it was cool. The wrappers were on what they call bobbin. So think of it like a pre-cut wrapper kind of in this machine. And it was like, I mean, I'm not even going fast enough. Like, I mean, you couldn't even see it.
It's impressive.
How quickly it was going.
The whole time I was there, I was hearing that what was it, a Bugs Bunny cartoon with where all of you see the machinery, like the retro machinery with the song, and everything's like dooch, 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 you know, all that stuff. I that was going in my head. That there's a tune that goes along with it, but it's like an old Bugs Bunny cartoon, all that mechanization. It's like something about it was kind of retro cool, you know.
Well, the cool thing was, dude, they actually, all those machines that they used were invented by them.
Yeah.
And it's made by a company in Italy to their specs, and then they buy them, you know, they bring in their own machine, and they also sell them to other companies. But they invented all those machines that they use.
Including the photographic one? There was the photographic flaw detection one. Was that theirs too?
I think they actually bought that technology.
Yeah.
They buy that technology, I'm pretty sure, from my wife's company.
Because I've heard of that. I knew a guy that worked in that kind of thing that did the high-speed photographic analysis of things looking for flaws. And I was like, that's pretty cool. They're using it for tobacco. Cool.
Yeah, Boris's brother was the one who's in charge of that. I mean, he's in charge of all that. Yeah, Boris basically takes the tobacco and the glamour, and the other brother's doing all, like, behind-the-scenes, making everything run smoothly.
Yeah, all the engineering parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's cool is they invented the 3D metal printing machine for metal. That was pretty cool. Yeah.
Which is awesome. And another crazy thing is you take someone, I don't know, you know, rolling cigars. Yeah, the first cigars they're going to roll suck. But after a month or two, they get the hang of it after a couple months, machine made. They said that it takes almost 6 months to calibrate the machines properly. Which is freaking nuts.
They got to get it perfect, but they're always running diagnostic tests. I mean, the machine's running because I asked Stefan. I said, why is the machine running? You're not even doing anything. He says they're just making sure everything's working properly and maintaining it.
Yeah. When you're dealing with thousands of cigars, you know, an hour or whatever, high speed, you have to be very precise. The range of error that's allowed to keep going and not screw things up is pretty small, so I can completely understand the intensity with which they evaluate everything and tune everything. It makes sense. It's definitely not a thing that they just kind of throw out and say, yeah, it's machine made, whatever. No, it's very close attention to detail.
It's true. It's very true.
I was completely impressed and awed. I mean, it's one of those. It's beautiful watching a handmade cigar made. It's wonderful. But seeing that machinery was just. I was speechless.
The packaging and rolling machines were hypnotic. Cool. I could just sit there and watch those for like an hour.
I mean, it was awesome. I mean, as an engineer. I mean, I was kind of intrigued by how the machinery was functioning and, you know, all the processes and all that. And it was just amazing how efficient everything was. Everything was so precise, so efficient. It was amazing. It was really cool.
I would agree. So, any final thoughts on the Agio part of the trip?
Just that it was eye-opening about the short filler. I mean, like I said, you know, Seth and I have smoked, you know, a lot of the short fillers are machine made from Cuba, and they're good. They're real good. But still, being Americans, you still have that, you know, negative thought about machine made. But, I mean, going over there and you're smoking them, you're sampling them firsthand, they're quality cigars. But, I mean, that's kind of the European way. they can't, for instance, while we were doing that pairing, it was hot as hell in there to be. So I went outside to the back patio area,
beautiful,
which connected to their cafeteria part. And while I was out there, just having a cigar, just trying to cool off a little bit, then some of the people came out, the employees, and sat out and eat their lunch or whatever. And we were talking about the cigars and how, like in Europe, they like a lot of the small cigars. And mainly it's because they don't have a lot of time to smoke. There's very, very few places they could smoke that's not been outlawed or banned or whatever. They were asking me about, you know, do we smoke a lot of machine-made small cigars in America? I said, well, no, not really. Most of the people, when we smoke cigars, you know, we like the larger, you know, long filler, handmade stuff. They're like, oh, really? I'm like, yeah. Well, the reason they were, you know, kind of curious about it is because, like I said, in Europe, they can't smoke in a lot of places. They were baffled. They were surprised when I told them, like, oh, yeah. You know, it's kind of most places there's, you know, there's smoking bans, but a lot of places it's up to the business owner. If I want to go into a restaurant, they have smoking, I can light up a cigar there. They're like, really? And they were totally surprised. Like, you could do that in America? I would say, yeah. You know, we have our most, you know, a lot of the cigar shops are full lounges. You can smoke there, or, you know, you can go out to a back deck and smoke, or there's a lot of places you can smoke. So, you know, we have a lot of time that we can enjoy, you know, a nice cigar. And it was just kind of baffling, like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool that you could actually do that over there in America. So it's kind of one of those things where, you know, we kind of take some of our freedoms for granted,
yeah,
you know, like that. But that was kind of eye-opening, kind of a little social interaction there. You know,
I'm going to put this out there. If Agio wants to win over the American market, they just need to make a machine-made 6x60. Do it. Do it, Agio. I'm calling it.
No.
We'll smoke it.
No, this is true.
They'll do it. I'm just saying, for them to take on this market, they should do it. It makes
sense.
No more
6x60s. No more six.
Yeah, Ben's a hater. No, just do it. Do it.
Can you imagine watching a machine make a 6x60?
That'd be awesome.
It'd be actually really sweet, actually.
There'd have to be tobacco just flying everywhere, though.
I mean, it'd be fantastic. I would like them to make a display machine that involves fountains of tobacco. Like, it's wildly inefficient, but, like, there's guns that fire, like, shotgun blasts of tobacco at a wall, and then it gets rolled up, and then fountains of tobacco flying around. That'd be fantastic. They could show up for the tour and then never turn it on again.
Never turn it on ever again. Exactly.
In a couple years, like, air guns shooting tobacco clusters at us. We're going to get bombarded with short leaf.
Basically like a t-shirt gun that they have at like sporting events full of tobacco.
Exactly, just little tobacco. They're going to shoot Sumatra at us. I mean, it's cigars. Not necessarily those on the American market, but definitely a lot of Royal Agio's products.
You know, maybe I should take that back. They should do a 6x60, but they should also do a short filler Lancero to keep Ben happy.
Dude, a Corona.
Or a Corona, but, I mean, they've already done stuff like Corona's-ish,
yeah.
But a Lancero.
And I'm already happy then. I'm good.
You basically smoked them.
Yeah, they were awesome. I like them. Maybe a Lonsdale. Lonsdale would be pretty good.
Ooh, that'd be a good one.
I asked Boris. He said he can make any size. He's, like, down from kind of a Cigarillo size up to, he's like a Toro, Robusto. He goes, it's just a matter of actually figuring the machines.
I mean, he basically said that they could make, because when we were talking to Logan, they said that they could make the Papas Fritas perfectly.
Yep.
That would be awesome.
Interesting.
I know. Very interesting.
I wonder how cheaper they would be if they did it.
I asked a very reliable source, and one that I trust.
Was it Seth?
Huh? Well, no, it was not Seth.
Oh, okay.
It was not Seth.
It's not very reliable, I was just going to say.
No. I actually asked the question, even before we left Belgium, and they're like, if you keep everything the same, meaning you don't change the tobacco, all the quality remains the same, but you make it, he goes, there's not much of a difference. He goes, there might be like maybe 20 or 30 cents. He goes, but the difference is... it is a difference.
Scale.
I mean, maybe a buck difference. He goes, so it's not, you would think it might be like a third of the cost. He goes, it's not. Like, there is a difference. But he goes, the thing is that instead of having to have 100 people roll cigars, he goes, you can put out 10 times that you can with your current rollers in a tenth of the time. So he's like, you can just pump those babies out. He goes, you don't need 6 months to roll for the IPCPR trade show. He goes, you need like a day and a half. And he goes, you're good.
So you're basically, what are they coming, tens of four?
Well, I think they've actually changed their packaging.
Paper
I think
packets
actually
come
in a,
four.
Yeah, paper yeah. packets, and they're in a count box now.
Paper packets of four, so you're looking at a pack of four, which is now a dollar cheaper, which, let's face it, a lot of people are going to be a fan of it. And if they're more readily available, because now you don't have to worry about, man, we can pop these babies out, not a problem.
Mm. I mean, I would
have
greater,
there's greater profit in it. There has to be.
I mean, I got to think there is greater profit, but I also think there's probably a greater headache because now you're exporting tobacco out of multiple countries, importing it, and then you're exporting it back out. I got to think the taxes would just be absurd.
They're already buying.
They're doing that now.
They're already buying the tobacco now. All they have to do is get them in touch with the providers, the growers. They ship it up there. Now they all have to do is program the machines.
But they're not buying Connecticut broadleaf. They're not buying.
They're not, but it doesn't mean that. Yeah, but they can still buy it. They can still get it shipped over there.
Right. I mean, understood. I'm just saying they're not getting that tobacco. It would be tough. And if you're taking a Papas Fritas out of Drew Estate directly to the U.S., and then now you have to take that same tobacco and then import it to Belgium, and then you have to export it back to the U.S.
Here's the other thing about it, though. Here's the other thing about this, though. Now, let's say you're having Papas Fritas coming out of the Netherlands. You're still shipping them out of there, and they'll still go to Miami Distribution, which, you know what, the cost, you know, maybe it won't change, maybe it will change. But now you have Papas Fritas readily available in Europe, and that is a size which is still approachable by the European market.
If you could churn them out fast enough, I think you could have your margins be lower. So if they were just trying to create the same amount, they would maybe, you know, 30 cents a cigar or whatever you said. But if they had the availability of tobacco and they were able to churn it out in volume, they could have a lot slimmer margins, and you could wind up with a much less expensive product. And, it could go gangbusters. And it's the possibility of the European market taking hold of it. It could be a huge thing. I wouldn't be surprised if there were already discussions about that happening. I mean, or at least, I'm sure it's at least been looked into, but who knows? Right. I mean,
Europe loves Budweiser's, Levi's, and Marlboro. Might as well give them the fucking Papas Fritas.
Well, two things, and this kind of segues into what we were, another thing we talked about is we went to the Inner Tobacco Show, which was in, where was it? Westfalen, Holland?
Dortmund.
Yeah, Dortmund, Germany. And it's more or less the IPCPR of Europe / the world, right? But one thing I want to say, and we'll talk about this next, but I just want to make a point here, is that the thing that, you know, you're talking about it going gangbusters in Europe, the thing I took away from that whole show is that it's hard to go gangbusters in Europe. Because it's not like the U.S. where you import a Papas Fritas into Miami, you can sell it any state, it's not really that difficult. Yeah, there might be taxes higher in another state. But over there, it's like, you can't just, okay, I'm going to import my cigars into Belgium, and then I'm going to sell to every country. You don't sell directly to retail shops there. Like, Drew Estate doesn't sell directly to a retail shop in Germany or the Netherlands or Italy. You have to actually have
distributors.
And it's
they handle that.
A cluster.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I took away is that I don't think people understand how good we have it with cigars here and how easy it is and how less regulated it is. And it's crazy to think that how much extra steps you have to go through and how much more expensive stuff is over there. That was like the eye-opening part for me.
Yeah, it's definitely weird how they, kind of like the way IPCPR is here, you have the retailers will come in, they'll talk to the manufacturers. Well, at Inter Tobacco, they don't do that, they can't. So you have the distributors, the middleman comes in, and they don't even really buy nothing at the show. They just kind of go and they see what's out. They don't do any ordering and stuff. It's kind of weird. you know, but the distributors get all that, and then they decide whether or not they want to bring it in or not or whatever, and then they sell to the shops. It's kind of
I think
weird.
The retailers do show up for one of the days, like the last
German, yeah, the very last day, yeah.
The German, yeah.
Which is weird, because I guess
they don't buy anything.
Yeah, I guess they know what day to show up, because we were told when we were there, this is the distributor day, and that's going to be the retailer day, and I'm like, is that, maybe they enforce that in some way, because we were there with Exhibitor, we didn't have to worry about it, but we thought it was interesting to have it split up like that. But I guess if you've got different levels like that, you have to deal with the people who actually make the purchases and then the end consumer. I guess it makes sense. I thought it was interesting how I didn't go around looking for samples or anything, but I got almost none. I mean, there were not much. But then in the Drew Estate booth, people were just walking up and grabbing product right off the shelf. I'm like,
dude, it was wicked.
CPR, that stuff's glued down. You can't take that stuff. So I thought that was really different. Everything was odd. It was like Bizarro World IPCPR.
And there was like five halls, or no, actually eight halls, and it was like being like Minotaur's Labyrinth. Like, you could not navigate yourself around anywhere. Like, Pete Jones, like, oh, I'm in hall four. We're like, okay, how long did it take us to find Pete's booth?
Forever.
Like, an hour? Like, it took forever. And they've got things segmented up into, like, I think they tried, where you have, like, the cigar hall, then you have, like, the hookah hall, then you have, like, the e-cigarette hall, then you have the pipe hall, but then there was really no form or function to it because, you know, Pete was, like, in the middle of, like, 17 hookah booths. So, and you'd walk in and it'd be like, okay, we're in the wrong hall right now.
Yeah, what was so the other thing that was kind of interesting was how the booths, like, of the known people that we know, like Padron, my father, Drew Estate, you know, CLE, Oliva, all those, and Davidoff. Davidoff was still pretty big, and so was Oliva. Most of the booths were probably at least half the size of what they are IPCPR.
Oh, at least.
And when you go to those booths IPCPR, you almost can't even get in there because there's so many people in there. But with this one, you know, especially when you have, like, Jonathan in a booth and Pete Johnson in the booth, like Christian Arroyo, they have, you know, they got their fans or whatever. So they're constantly being hounded for, you know, pictures or, you know, want to talk to them or whatever. At Enter Tobacco, though, I mean, hell, we were there. We were sat there and, you know, paired cigars and were drinking with Pete Johnson for, what, 4 hours?
Uninterrupted.
Yeah. You know? Except there was one guy that came in looking for one of the Padrones.
Pepin looked lonely. He was just kind of chilling. He was kind of...
Yeah.
Nobody's coming up to him, you know?
He didn't have all his people to be godfather to.
Exactly.
It's true. I mean, it was a very strange world. Like, the other thing is there are so many companies that I've never even heard of.
Right.
I mean, like Cortez cigars and all these that you've never heard of them.
They were right across the hall, or right across the little walkway from Drew Estate.
So swanky.
They had a massive booth. It was a really beautiful looking booth and everything.
They had a ceiling. And,
they did. It was awesome.
And they were packed out pretty much all the time. They were serving beer. They were serving the French version, our little Strupel waffles, which we'll get to in a minute, talk about those. I mean, they were packed out, and they were really well-known, but they only distribute cigars in, what, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Germany, and Belgium, I think. That was the only places that they put their cigars out, except for a handful of them. It said one cigar, I think, is actually in the U.S. somewhere, but I don't even know what it is. I've never even heard of it. You know,
I still feel a little bad that we didn't go over and talk to them more. We were going to go back, but we ran out of time.
Yeah, because the CEO of J. Cortez, and I can't remember what his name is off the top of my head, but he's a really cool guy. He was actually talking to Brian and I about a campaign that he's running that's kind of like CRA is here, but on the European side. And basically, he's just trying to get that started because, especially in Germany, they're about to come down with some really heavy-handed anti-tobacco regulations, and it pretty much could kill them all off. But he's like got a Twitter or really not just Twitter, it's a social media campaign, which hashtag save cigar, kind of like a little ground roots movement or something going about getting awareness for this legislation. Because if anti-tobacco legislation comes down over there, nobody really knows about it. There's nobody there to speak up and say, hey, here, this is coming, you know, let's do something about it. But there's nothing over there like that. So he's trying to start something like CRA over there for Europe, which I thought was a really awesome thing. And like Brian was saying, we wanted to go interview him about it, but we just ran out of time.
Yeah.
And we just didn't have to get a chance to do it. It was actually 30 minutes we had one day, and he was at the booth. So
yeah,
that would have been cool to talk about over there. But
yeah, I mean, everyone's cracking down. I mean, it's. I've heard Germany's cracking down on tobacco and so forth, and that's a big country for tobacco.
We did. Oh, go ahead.
It was cool. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, the other thing I thought was interesting is that everything related to hookah was like organic. Like every sign was like organic hemp hookah, organic hemp e-cigarette. Like, everything was organic hemp. It was weird. It was just a strange place. It was like kind of like the Twilight Zone.
There was a lot of head shop stuff there, for sure.
Yeah.
a lot of stuff from the marijuana. But it was just cool. I mean, hey, and not all that either. But, I mean, there was a lot of stuff for that, too. Like, you'd go to some of the hookah booths or whatever, and they'd have a whole wall of stuff just for, you know, marijuana paraphernalia stuff, you know? Which is, I mean, it's everywhere over there anyway, but that was interesting to see, because you would never see something like that IPCPR, obviously.
Oh, God, no.
But, the other thing I was going to say was how business-like it was. You know, like, everything was, nothing was flashy. I mean, the most flashy thing there was probably two things. One booth had an actual three-piece classical music. No, maybe
I think
it was a quartet.
Proper quartet, actually.
It was a quartet playing classical music, and they were awesome. They were really good. But they also had one booth, actually had a little mini Oktoberfest.
That's true.
At their booth.
Or was it Polish Fest?
Yeah, Polish tobacco.
It was weird. It was a German company, but it was called something Polska. So it had something to do with
I think it was Polish tobacco or something like that.
Yeah. Well, back in the day, that was all together anyway. Back in the day. So, I mean, that's kind of understandable.
The booth girls. Fuck me running. I've never seen so many hot women in my life.
Yeah, and the thing they weren't really, like, they kind of, you know, IPCR, most of them, they dressed like strippers. Where over here, they were hot, but they were still classy. Like, they were classy.
Some were a little trashy, but I kind of like that.
Think about it.
I liked it.
One of the, those four classy looking chicks, there, you know, whatever you want to call them there, but they were still hot. They still wore, you know, tight, you know, mini skirt kind of with dresses or whatever, but it wasn't like it is in IPCPR where they're like, come off of Bourbon Street or something.
No giant stripper heels or anything like that.
No,
tassels or whatever.
Did you guys see any Toscano cigars?
Their booth was massive.
Yeah,
huge.
Yeah.
No, have you ever smoked those?
Yeah,
I have. Yeah, they're great. I like the ones we had.
Really, unique.
Very smoky.
Smokes.
Very smoky and peppery and so the almost pipe tobacco-y.
Yeah, the story behind Toscano is because a lot of it's actual Cuban seed, is that when they came back in the 1500s and the 1600s, they started growing that Cuban seed in Tuscany.
So
basically, it's Cuban seed grown in Italy. That's what it is, man. They grew.
I've been to Tuscany. Where do they grow tobacco in Tuscany?
Obviously, you've never been to Tuscany, man.
I've been all up in that motherfucker, and I didn't see no tobacco.
You got all up in its business.
It's mostly vineyards. I mean, it's mostly grapes, but I mean, they're still growing tobacco.
Olives. And a lot of other stuff. I didn't see any tobacco, but
well, it's like the CAO Italia. That's got Italian tobacco.
That's true.
Yeah, it's got that. That's true. It's got some Italian tobacco, huh?
Yeah, but you're right. The one Toscana that I had was actually Cigar Craig Vanderslice was actually gave you one of our trips we were on. I can't remember which one it was, and it was one of those long ones that had it was a dark one.
Yeah.
That basically you cut it in half.
Yep.
Which was cool. It had a little Italian flag wrapper on it or whatever.
Yeah, in a barrel.
Shit, I thought it was pretty damn good. And actually, Brian and I at IPCPR, Miami Cigar is actually the one distributing them in the United States, or they're about to. There was a guy in there, yeah, and he gave us each one, which I still haven't smoked mine. Now I remember that I got it somewhere.
I can't remember if I smoked that one or not. I had one that a guy who owns the shop here, he used to smoke them all the time, and he gave me one. He happened to have it, and he says, I love these, and I smoked it. And first one I had was great.
What that one reminds me of, and this goes back to our pipe thing, was like the old Kentucky, old fire cured, the Kentucky pipe tobacco. That one tastes like that to me. That one did. That's all the Toscano I've ever had was that one. I know they got like a ton more, but
yeah, it's they're interesting cigars. I've smoked a couple. It's they're fun, very different.
Yeah, but Inner Tobacco was definitely eye opening. It was really cool. I was so glad they brought us over there.
Inner Tobacco Sack.
Inner Tobacco Sack. Coming in soon.
I wonder if that video's gone live yet.
He'll never post it.
He said he was going to.
We got to tell the story, because the story is amazing.
I shouldn't tell the story, because that would spoil the video when it comes out.
No, we should just tease that it's out there and just, look for
coming
it.
Coming soon. Inner Tobacco Sack.
Message Drew Estate on social media and say that you want to see Inner Tobacco Sack.
Yeah, hashtag Inner Tobacco Sack.
And it involves a trash bag. That's all I'm going to say. That I somehow had on me.
Yeah, I don't know. Why did you have a trash bag on? Did you bury a body or something like that?
No. The reason I had a trash bag is when I was in Costa Rica back in, I don't know, I went in 2006, and I went back in 2008, and when I was there in 2006, like, I was backpacking, and we didn't wash clothes, and it was just humid and hot and stanky, and basically my luggage was smelling up the joint. And I've never really been stopped at security, but I got stopped because it was such a rank thing. They thought, I guess, a dead body or some shit in my luggage, because they stopped and the whole stink went across the terminal. So since then, I have always
considered seeing a doctor about that, because that doesn't sound healthy.
Dude, if you're in Costa Rica during the summer, I don't care if you've got like the surgery that makes you not sweat and it kills all your sweat glands, you're going to sweat. It's hot as fuck down there. And so
it's
I carry trash
body
bag.
Odor there, man. But it's New Orleans hot.
It's New Orleans hot for sure.
That's pretty
it's New Orleans hot.
Fuck, but why would I go from?
It's pretty.
That,
yeah. Why would you? Why would you leave? Why would you leave the bayou just to go to Costa Rica just to have a?
Because you can see fucking monkeys flying over your head and shit. It's awesome.
I know a guy in New Orleans that could do that for you too.
Yeah, monkeys.
Well, that's true. That is New Orleans.
I can
get anything in New Orleans. This is true. This is true. Well, anyway, so that's why I carry a trash bag, to put my stinky clothes in. And that's why I had one.
Yeah, it was a great trip. I mean, all the beers that we had was real interesting, you know. And like I brought back, too, Westlaven 12s.
Oh, by the way, I'm mailing your package, Ben, so you'll have another one.
Okay, awesome. I love packages. But they
love the package.
That was the... I remember we went to a beer store on the last day in Antwerp, and we just, a lot of people, like, Hewitt.
Yeah.
Went a little bit crazy there, bought a bunch of beers and stuff. And
did any of your stuff break, Hewitt? I have to ask.
Nope.
Awesome.
I'm pretty good about that. I had a bunch of Ziploc bags that in one of my bags. I'd forgotten they were in there. Thank God that they were in there. So I was able to Ziploc each and every one of the bags, and I used clothing and whatever else to pad them up, so they were sealed, and I had it to the point. I actually stayed up the night before we left, and basically for a couple of hours just packing OCD. You know, I had it so I could sit it upright and jiggle it, and I could hear the beer sloshing around, but there was no jingling of any bottles. So I'm like, I think we're good. I think we're good here.
You're good.
So,
yeah,
now,
Brian's got
I would have had
drunk engineering.
If I were going to do it again, I think I might have brought a trash bag and actually lined the entire suitcase in the trash bag just to be on the safe side, because you can wash beer out of your clothes, but if your suitcase starts leaking, I think you're probably going to have to deal with something along the way, and you're probably going to wind up getting a lot of things thrown out. So, but
yeah,
worked out pretty well. I was obsessive about it, but it worked, and the beer has been good so far.
What was your guys' experience like when you went into the LCDH? How is that different than going into a regular cigar shop in the States?
That was really cool.
It was really stupid.
It's full of Cubans.
It's a very different experience.
It's so upscale douchey.
It was no.
I can't describe it in a better way.
Such
than
a
that.
Hater.
You can get some damn class and get to watch Downton Abbey. You'll understand.
Why do you have to hate Franca like that, Logan?
I don't know what her damn name was, but Franca. Like,
okay, the gypsy knows.
She was nice. I mean, she was a nice lady, but nice. I have never been to a cigar store. Now, granted, I've been to, you know, maybe not, you know, LCDHs, but other Cuban stores, you know, in other places around the world, and I've seen this, but I just, it's so weird to me and foreign. Like, I hate service where it's like, the humidor is like locked up. So she like,
oh, yeah.
Has these trays and she has these gloves on and like,
yeah, it was awesome.
She takes Ben in there and like, literally, first of all, Ben's in there for a fucking hour going through all this shit. And like, we're all kind of waiting to buy stuff and look at stuff and whatever. And I just walk in, barge in with a tray. And she's like, oh, I go, I got it. Don't worry about it. And I'm just, as an American, just want to serve myself. That's like a buffet, man. Like,
now,
I don't
to be fair, to be fair, we all look like we had just washed ashore from a shipwreck. So
this
like,
is true. This is
true. It's been raining.
Yeah, it was raining. It got soaking wet because it was raining.
This I was probably in there. She probably feared for her safety.
Oh, yeah. And then, so we walk in, and she's standing behind the counter. She's like, oh, can I help you? I'm like, yeah, I want to get some cigars. So we walk down these wooden stairs, like mahogany even, about three or four stairs or whatever. You go down this little area, and the humidor has this door in the front, and it comes out like a U, you know, yep. With the humidor. And she has to buzz the door open to unlock it. You walk in. She puts on white cotton gloves like she's a curator at a museum, gets a silver tray, felt-lined silver tray, brings it in, and it's like I had them all in a valet. It was so awesome. She would sit there, and I'd say, yeah, I would like that. I want one of those. I'll take three of those Trinidad Robusto teas, which I freaked out when I saw.
Oh, yeah.
Those were awesome cigars. And I got like one of every regional, one of every Edición Limitada was there. And I got some other ones that were just, you know, good standbys were awesome, like the Party Guy 3D number 5, which are freaking fantastic. I gave one to Hewitt. He loved it.
Good.
And the Robusto Tees, which I haven't seen in forever, and I've been wanting to get some more for a long time. So I got a couple of those, and it was just amazing. You know, she takes you back. I mean, while she's doing it, she has a hand scanner, and she's scanning the tag on every box that you pick something from. So when she goes back, she just puts it down, and she rings up each little cigar that you bought. It was kind of efficient, actually. But, I mean, behind her was a bunch of rare rums and stuff, a lot of Cuban rums, and other rums from other parts of the world that we can't get here. Like, there was one that Brian was trying to find all over Antwerp, but then we finally found it in the LCDH.
Legendario.
Yeah.
Yep, that's the thing I really, really wanted to find while it's over there. I'll go grab the bottles if you guys want to look at them.
Oh, you bought that? I didn't even know you bought that.
Oh, I did. Yep, and I shipped those.
Show
those
the viewers too. What the label looks like.
All right, hang on a sec.
Yeah, but I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, that was the main thing I wanted to do.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, because I went in there, and it's one of those things, it's just, you know, especially with Rager production, I was just like, it's like, can I see the box code? And then she'd close the box very carefully, and then you know, show me the box code, and it's pretty.
It's so stupid.
I gotta get my battery charger. I'll be right back.
Everybody's leaving us. I don't know, man. I just felt really, really, it was too up class for me. But I did buy. I don't know. Like, I did buy, I don't know, 50, 60 euros worth of Cubans, and it was cool. I'm glad that I did. I'll probably never smoke them. Yeah, I don't really like Cubans, but I did it just to say that I did.
Well, that's probably half of what I smoke now. Maybe
you guys can
see
these
nowadays. There's the Legendarios right there.
Yep, and the one with the white label on it, I had that. A friend had a little bit left that he'd gotten somewhere along the way, and I'm like, this is the best rum I've ever had. So,
what's the difference in the two that you bought?
Well, let's see.
One's
to begin with, about €2. Ron Añejo, I think one is older than the other. I think the Añejo is aged longer.
Yeah,
The Añejo is also 40% ABV, and the Legendario Elixir de Cuba is 34%. So, that's... I don't know. I've never had the one with the black labels. Saw them both. I'm like, well, I know the one's really good. Well, screw
they're,
it.
They're both made. They're made in Spain, right?
Nah, I believe those are Cuba.
Oh, it is. I thought they were Spanish.
Yeah, Hecho in Cuba.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Sweet. That's why we can't get them.
Well, save some when it comes to Atlanta.
No, so I don't know if I can promise that.
Yeah, alcohol around you doesn't survive very long.
Yeah, it's quality stuff. The nice thing about it is nobody knows about it, and I think even if somebody had looked through it, they might not have realized it because everybody's famous
Club.
Cuban rep? Havana Club. Everybody's looking for Havana Club.
It's okay. It's not great. I mean,
the stuff we had at Pete's booth was awesome. I've never had that before, but.
That was Cuban rum too. That was Havana Club.
That was some special blue label Havana Club.
That was Havana Club, yeah, but it was some kind of rare edition. Yeah. I never heard of it before.
That was delicious.
That's the
Charlie Venato about that one because he's a big connoisseur of rum.
He's a big connoisseur of a lot of things.
That's true.
Some of those things rhyme with rum.
One of those rhyme with sleeping in, Charlie.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
There we go. Zing.
The zing. But no, it was good. And there was a lot, there was obviously us four on the trip, and there's a lot of other people, but it was a good time. You know, it was
It's a great group of guys.
It was a great trip.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Probably one of the best trips I've been on so far. I really enjoyed it. It was, like I said, for the most part, a pretty good group of people. It was what we were all with. And, you know, what was really cool was the last day in Antwerp, which, you know, Seth wasn't there for this part, but we walked to this beer
I was with
bar.
Patrick in an airport, so.
Yeah, you lose.
Mewling out ill-gotten bottles of Westy 12.
Yeah. What was that place called, Brian? You remember what that
was? It was like Patrick alive, man. Patrick.
Oh, the absinthe place?
No, not the absinthe, though. I was going to get to that in a little bit.
This was the beer place
we went to right before we got on the bus to drive to Germany. Had the lambic trays and all that. Or
oh,
whatever.
Dude, they had the douchey lambic baskets.
The hipsters. Come on. That's a lambic basket.
Johnny Brook got two to go.
Whatever that beer was, that lambic was outstanding. But wasn't it like Der Zeppelin or something like that?
Dry Fontaine. Old Goose.
No, the place we went to.
It was
Zeppelin.
Oh,
yeah. It started with an apostrophe T.
Yeah, we checked.
It was like Zeppelin because they dropped bombs there or something.
Dresden?
No, we weren't in Dresden. That place got blown off the hell.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, you're talking about bombs. Dresden got blown the hell up.
Yeah, that was Churchill's retaliation for bombing London.
Well, it was Churchill's retaliation, but we fucking did it all for him. So.
Well, we did a lot of things for a lot of.
This is true.
How many towns that we had to stop to wait for Monty to roll in to say Monty took the town? Patton had to do that at least twice, I know.
So yeah, we had to let
General Montgomery roll in. Anyway, no, enough with the history lesson.
I'm not old enough to get into vintage wars yet. I figure I got another 10 or 15 years before I hit that point. Every guy of a certain age picks a war and gets just ridiculously geeky about it. My dad's got the Civil War. Other people have Revolutionary or World War I or World War II. Yeah.
I'm a nerd. I'm a history nerd. I study them all. I love it all. But that lambic we had there was outstanding. I thought it was one of the best beers I've had there. But another cool place we went to, as we just alluded to, was a absinthe bar that was in Germany. It was the first time we were actually in Germany. We were trying to find some place to go get something to eat, basically.
And, that was the idea.
That was the idea. But it ended up being
a beer hunt.
Yeah, it was a beer hunt. They ended up at an acid bar where they had some pretty good beers that we tried a bunch of different ones. We tried some kind of beer for kids. I don't know. Brian, what was that again? I don't remember.
It was a Berliner Weiss. It was with the Woodruff syrup. They call it Waldmeister or Waldmeister. It's a low ABV, slightly sour wheat thing that they add syrup to, and I guess kids drink it, or I don't know, or did at one point before that became a bad thing, I guess. But
and there's two versions, right? A red.
Yeah, there's the regular Berliner Weiss, and they actually have the syrups that they added, and one of them's that Woodruff syrup, which is some herb, And the other one, I think, was raspberry. So you could put it in there. So you get a little bit of the tart wheat beer, and then you get a little bit of the – you mix it right. It's nice. It's pleasant. It's very beer hipster over here, and over there it's kind of like, what? You're drinking children's beer. What
when
the hell is that?
They kind of like laughed when we ordered
yeah.
that beer.
You got to be kid-friendly.
Exactly.
Then we started
friendly.
Pounding the absinthe, so we kind of like – they were surprised that we actually drank so much absinthe. Because usually you drink one glass, maybe two. We all had like four or five apiece. It was crazy. And the best one we had was the one from Marilyn Manson.
Which is crazy.
That was, to me, that one, it was kind of like right in the middle. Like it wasn't too licorice-y flavored. It wasn't too high in alcohol. But it was kind of like right in the middle. And that was probably, to me, the best tasting one. But it was interesting.
Isn't Van Gogh's absinthe a big one, isn't it?
I think it's popular. I think it sells well, but I don't think it's with the nerds. I don't think it's as popular as some other ones. I got into it for like 30 seconds and bought a few bottles, and that's good. It's fun.
It's a lot of work.
But you set stuff on fire, so that's fun.
Yeah, it's kind of like smoking pipes. It's a lot of work, but the payoff is pretty good.
Well, you don't have to keep setting it on fire every time you want to take a drink. That's the big difference. I mean, you can once the fire's done, you can just drink
it. Well, if you're ballsy, you can do it if you want to.
I mean, you could try.
I remember somebody tried. I don't remember who it was, but I remember the waitress kind of freaked out at one point because the way they did the absinthe there, it's not the true traditional way. But basically, they brought us the absinthe in the absinthe glass, which basically looks like an old-timey milkshake glass, but looks like. You got an absinthe that's about probably a third of the way up with a sugar cube at the bottom. And you have a special spoon that basically looks like a miniaturized, like a
butter knife. It's kind of like a butter knife with
wide with a triangle. It's got holes in it. And basically, what it is you stir in the sugar cube. But what you do is you pull the sugar cube out, set it on top of the knife, on top of the drink. You light the sugar cube on fire. Until it goes out. And when it goes out, you dump it in your absinthe and stir it up. And then after that, if you want to, you could, which most people would do, is what you're supposed to do, is you pour water over the top of it, probably about half and half or maybe, 2-1 or something like that. I mean, I usually do 2-1 because I don't like a lot of strong licorice flavor. The traditional way is you'd actually sit it next to this big water fountain that has a little spout on it, and you'd had little drops on the sugar cube. That's why it takes like 30 to 40 minutes to make a true absinthe drink, is it drops on the top of the cube until it dissolves the entire cube of sugar into the absinthe. You're good to go. Well, I can't remember who it was, but somebody had their sugar cube was still on fire. They were about to dump it in the absinthe. That would have been fucking disastrous. That waitress was just like, oh, wait, no. And it was like, oh, okay, you put it back. I was like, that might have been the coolest thing we've seen the entire trip if that would have happened. But still, it was pretty cool,
What was the food we were looking for in Germany that we never actually found? Schnitzels. Never had schnitzel. Found any schnitzel.
The one place that we went to go eat in Germany, to try to find German food, was actually an American restaurant in Germany.
There you go.
This is true.
So you've never had proper Wiener Schnitzel?
Nope.
Not in Germany.
Not in Germany.
Man.
No. It's funny because at the absinthe bar, we ordered a whole lot of like hors d'oeuvres, like a bunch of fat Americans we do. We order like 6 or 7 appetizers for the table. And it stressed out the cook so much that he didn't want to serve us anymore.
He shut us down.
Yeah, he shut us down. He didn't want to actually... Like, we couldn't order any real food after that because apparently at that bar, you don't buy a lot of food. You basically get drunk. You eat the food to extend your drunk, basically.
Fill up the tummy.
We went there to eat and get drunk. So they were basically like, well, we're running out of food. You're eating all our food up.
We only have
one cook back there.
Six plates of fries.
Yeah.
They said they were out of food. They said, well, what do you have left? I said, well, we have potatoes. Give us 7 plates of potatoes.
Yeah.
We could probably do 5. Okay, we'll take five.
Yeah, we shut the kitchen down.
Give me all of your bacon and eggs.
Yeah. Typical Americans.
So, well,
I think she liked us.
I think she did.
We were hot.
She loves shades, bro.
It's his girl. I'm sure. Shades.
Shades, bro. Shades. But it was a good trip, you know. We've been on here an hour and a half, typical show, so we went kind of way over. Let's just have final thoughts from everyone. Ben, what were your final thoughts on the trip?
It was definitely eye-opening experience. I mean, for one, I've never been to Europe, so it was kind of intriguing to see a totally different, you know, different cultures they have over there. But just between, you know, the kind of the understanding of how they see short-filler cigars compared to how we see them, and also with Inter Tobac about how they run that trade show compared to IPCPR, and their thoughts on basically how the consumer interacts with the retailer interacts with the distributor interacts with the manufacturers was kind of intriguing. So it was all in all, it was a learning experience every day. It was really cool, really interesting. I was glad I went. I would definitely like to do that again for sure.
Cool. Okay, Brian?
I enjoyed it. I would do it again just to go over there and hang out. Inter Tobac was massive and odd, and I don't know if I would do it again. I'm not sure. It's really good for, you know, Stogie Review, what we can do there. But it was a good time. I was impressed with Agio's operation, both from, you know, their ability to produce a tremendous amount of cigars and just everything else they organized. It all came together extremely well. There were really no hiccups or anything. And, you know, if you want to check out the factory tour, I've got a video up on Stogie Review. Check that out. You'll get exactly what we got effectively. So.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, I don't think I can say anything to what I've been saying. It was a really good trip. I mean, it definitely changed my thought on European kind of short fillers for sure, and it was just very interesting to see kind of the entire process. But and then Inter Tobac was just strange on just a lot of different levels, but with that, you know, really appreciate you guys coming on, taking time out of your day to share thoughts. You guys can, where can Brian and Bull Shark, where obviously Stogie Review, you guys, yes, everyone should know what Stogie Review is, but where can they find you guys? Tell them, everyone, just a quick shout out about what Stogie Review is in case they've been living under a rock for the last 8 years.
Cigar reviews, basically. We do cigar reviews. We don't do a lot of ratings. We just write it up, or we do a lot of video reviews, and that's kind of our thing. And then just a shit ton of interviews at trade shows, at least at IPCPR.
Got it. So StogieReview.com, if you didn't know. You've been living under a rock. So appreciate you guys coming on. Appreciate everyone checking it out. We'll be back, I believe, next week. Bull Shark and I will be back with Pipe Dummies on Tuesday, sharing our pairings on Wednesday, Cigar Chat on Thursday, the shows. And actually, Seth, when do you have the Cuban show? What embargo? Isn't it next week?
What embargo on Monday, 9:30.
Damn, we're going four nights a week now.
Yellow Snapper and I are doing we sent each other blind sticks. We have no idea what we're smoking.
I feel weird that I don't have a fish name.
We'll get one. Logan's fucking manatee. I mean, we didn't even give him a damn fish. Because
I'm fat and slow and like to roll near the bottom of the ocean.
And then Thursday we have Boveda.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Boveda or Boveda?
You know, I have no idea what the hell it is. That's our
Boveda.
That's a Boveda.
That's the first question. How do you pronounce your name?
Right?
So
that will be question one. So appreciate you, everyone, checking it out. You can check us out at CigarFederation.com and all over the InstaWeb, Cigar Federation on Twitter, YouTube, podcasts, freaking everywhere. Everyone, stay safe. Appreciate you tuning in, and we're out.